the forecasts were lousy, and I'm not going to let the forecasters off the hook.
It came much stronger and hit us harder than anyone or any organization had forecasted.
We've already started a postmortem, believe me, all of us looking very hard in the mirror. Clearly, we could have done better, and we will do better.
This is Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon, and I'm joined here in the studios of WBGO in Newark by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Good evening, Governor.
Hello, Nancy. Good to be with you again.
We're happy to have you, and we're pleased to give New Jersey residents the opportunity to ask you their questions. Listeners, what do you want to hear from Governor Murphy? If you'd like to ask a question, the number to call is 844-677-9283. That's 844-677-9283. WBGO and WHYY's Statehouse reporter Joe Hernandez is here and will also be taking your questions via social media. So please tweet them to us for Governor Murphy by using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. So, Governor, I think right out of the gate, everybody wants to talk about the snowstorm. We can't stop talking about the snowstorm. We hate traffic jams.
Yep,
we're passionate about them.
No question.
You've had to talk about this already quite a bit, and I know that you've said that the storm came in faster and heavier than was expected, and that because it arrived right at the rush hour peak with kids getting out of school and early dismissals out of work, that then the plow trucks and the salters couldn't get through. So then we just had, I don't think anyone's ever seen the gridlock that we had all over the state, all over New
York
City, too.
Awful. And folks were incredibly frustrated. Who could blame them? And I don't blame them, for sure. And let there be no doubt, the buck stops with me. And by the way, there were an extraordinary amount of extenuating circumstances. There's no question about that on the one hand. But on the other hand, I'm the chief executive officer of the state, and we have to do everything we can and to do everything we can to avoid situations like that. And the folks should know that we know that. We're doing a postmortem. You know, we had a really ugly, underperforming reality at the Port Authority bus terminal, for instance. In addition to the hours that people were on roads or trains that were late, we had a really ugly, and I'm very critical of that, and including self-critical. So,
people were locked out instead of being able to shelter in place.
Not only locked out, and you also had, and I think there's some very poor decisions were made by the Port Authority, if I may say, and we're going to get into that in more detail. You had a huge mismatch between the amount of buses that were there, that were able to get there, versus the amount of people who needed to get on buses. And my message to everybody is we have to do better. We must do better, and we will do better, no matter what the circumstances. And I think Mother Nature's not going to start throwing a 70-mile-an-hour fastballs down the middle of the plate. That's gotten a lot more complicated, and we just have to adjust to that. We have to use a 21st-century playbook. And again, the buck stops with me. We actually last night preemptively talked about two possible storm systems. This week, the one last night didn't materialize. Tonight's does not feel like it's at the level that we thought it would be, but we're going to exercise an abundance of caution, communicate, deploy equipment much more aggressively, brine roads aggressively in advance, and brining is that saltwater substance that allows us to fight back against icing and slush on the roads. Put equipment in those hilly interstate places where we invariably have a jackknife tractor trailer. And so my message is people are frustrated. I don't blame them for one second. We're going to do everything we can to get back out ahead of these storms and make sure folks know that.
Okay, I think we have a question from social that Joe Hernandez has for us. Joe?
The Joe Hernandez.
Hey, Governor. This question is from Mike Inganamort. He's a councilman in Chester, New Jersey, in Morris County. And this is also snow-related. He says, will the state consider reimbursements for municipalities whose local DPWs plowed state roads and whose police coordinated related detours, which compounded the traffic problems?
It's a very fair question, Mike. I hope he's listening. I've got my entire cabinet listening right now, so I'm going to get some combination of our treasurer, Liz Moyo, our Department of Transportation Commissioner, Diane Scicchetti, to follow up with you, Mike. Let me say this, by the way. I mentioned the Port Authority. I meant, you know, Mike's talking about roads being plowed, law enforcement. At all levels, there was extraordinary exhibition of work ethic and heroism in some cases, linesmen and women going the extra mile. So I'm talking, when I'm critical, I'm talking about leadership, decisions that get made at the leadership level, the rank and file. I met with some bus drivers on Friday, the day after the storm, who did extraordinary work driving NJ Transit buses deep into the night, long after shifts were over. That was the case at so many local municipalities we saw. Law enforcement folks just laid it out, and we will, you know, we all need to keep that in mind. I'm deeply appreciative of a lot of individual acts of courage and hard work.
Okay, so let's move on, because another topic that is still being chewed over in the last couple of weeks is the election, the midterms.
Yep.
New Jersey Republicans are at their weakest in more than 100 years. There's only one Republican left in the entire 14-member delegation in both chambers in Congress. In terms of our everyday lives here in New Jersey, what do you expect is going to change now that there's Democratic leadership in the House of Representatives?
Before I answer that, Nancy, I want to talk about a Republican who was not on the ballot 2 weeks ago, and that's former Governor Chris Christie.
Okay.
And I want to give him a shout out. He and I don't see everything, shall we say, eye to eye. But tonight is a very special night for the governor and Mary Pat and their kids. His portrait is being unveiled as we speak at Morven, the former governor's residence in Princeton. My wife is honored to be there with our daughter, as well as the lieutenant governor. So I wanted to give him a shout out on a very special evening. I think the midterms say a lot about where we have been in this state for the past year and where we are likely to keep headed. And that is that we stand as pro-growth progressives. And that means that we push back on the labels that Hey, listen, either you're a progressive or you're a good steward of the economy, but not both. And the myths keep going right up and down the line. Either you're for the environment or you're for job growth. Well, that's not true. You could be both. That's just in. You could stand for gun safety and respect the Second Amendment. You can have a safe and secure state and still have sensible immigration laws. You can invest in education and infrastructure and prove that you can grow the economy and still be a proud progressive. And I think you've seen that from our first 10 months in office, and you saw that play out in the ballot box. You saw an enormous amount of frustration against a lot of the wrong-headed leadership coming at us out of Washington. And the Trump us versus them playbook, which I think you saw folks in this state reject. And we got Senator Menendez reelected in the teeth of a really ugly campaign run against him. As you mentioned, we got all seven of the Democrats reelected, and the Democrats took four of the five Republican seats. By the way, I'm the governor of the entire state, not just the titular head of the party, and I reached out to Chris Smith today and said I wanted to sit with him soon. It is 11 Democrats to one Republican in the House of Representatives. 2 years and 2 weeks ago, it was 6-6. So I think you're going to see a continuation of the same. I think that's what the election results told us, that a pro-growth, progressive, we're all in this together. We're New Jerseyans first. We can both grow the economy and stand for the right things. I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Does it mean that we're going to see funding for the Gateway Tunnel or the SALT deduction, the property tax deduction given back?
I met with two of the new members today, and those were topics number one and two. I think we have a very, and I don't want to get people's expectations too high, because I've been disappointed now since I was elected that the Trump administration hasn't gotten there yet on Gateway and the Portal Bridge. I'm still optimistic they will get there. But we have a unified, very focused House delegation on both sides of the Hudson, Nancy. That's an important thing. Both New Jersey and New York speaking with one voice. I think we've got that time and place is coming together. I think the state local tax deduction, which is awful and really is a direct shot at New Jersey, I think it's going to be a harder lift. But we have the intensity, the focus and the team now. If we're going to get it done, this is the group I think we can do it with.
We spoke to a bunch of voters this past week, and we have this voter who you mentioned, Senator Bob Menendez, and this is what he had to say.
I have to say he disappoints me in his decision-making and his personal life and how it spilled into the political arena.
I'm not so sure about Bob Menendez, but I just know that I'm all just about like the Democratic Party because I really feel like we definitely need to get 45 out of office.
And he's been there a long time. I think it's time for new blood. Surprised they ran him again, to be honest with you.
So that was actually a montage of three voters. But we heard this a lot. I was out reporting and talked to a lot of people who basically, you know, the word was, as Democrats were saying, I'm going to hold my nose and vote for Senator Menendez because they were upset about Trump. But as the head of the Democratic Party in New Jersey, why wasn't there a strong push to have a primary candidate, you know, a year ago against Menendez, who was clearly struggling with the federal indictments against him at that time?
I would just say I don't want to let facts get in the way here, but he won by almost 10 percentage points. He was exonerated in the court.
Do you disagree with the premise that Democrats were unhappy with him but were afraid of giving Trump another vote in the Senate?
Yes, I do disagree with that. I think he's done extraordinary work representing our interests. He's a bulldog. He can, you know, he and I were saying on the campaign trail, he doesn't start the fights on behalf of New Jerseyans and on behalf of our interests, but he ends them. Look at what literally Bob Menendez co-wrote the Affordable Care Act. Look at the impact that's had in New Jersey, particularly on folks with pre-existing conditions, seniors, women trying to get access to complete access to health care. He is almost singularly responsible for getting $60 billion with a B dollars in Sandy, Superstorm Sandy aid. He is the strongest voice in our party in foreign relations. He fights like heck for our interests. And so I just would say I don't agree with the premise. I respect the individuals, obviously. I just don't agree with them. I believe this is a major step on behalf of our interest to get Bob reelected.
Okay, so we're going to go to another call. We have Alex in Morristown. Alex, welcome to Ask Governor Murphy.
Hi, Governor Murphy.
Hey, Alex, how are you?
We spoke previously when you did Ask the Governor on New Jersey 12 News. And I recall you saying that you would have recreational marijuana legalized by January 2019. And I was wondering how that effort's going.
It's slower than I'd like, Alex. The legislature is still deliberating on this. This is something that I could continue to be committed to without question. Now, it's not an easy one. I got four kids, 21, 19, 17, 15, so this one didn't jump off the shelf at me. And we are creating a whole industry from nothing, from a blank sheet of paper. But the reason I want to do this is social justice. We have the widest white, non-white gap of persons incarcerated in America. The biggest contributing factor, not the only one, but the biggest one is low-end drug possession crimes. And we got to solve that. So I would just say to whether it's a legislator who's on the fence or an individual who's on the fence out there, I can understand perhaps your skepticism, but I want to just say the following. We're not inventing marijuana. Marijuana exists. What are we trying to do? We're trying to right social injustices of the past and make them whole again. We're trying to get the business out of the hands of the bad guys. We're trying to protect our kids. This is adult use marijuana, and that would be strictly enforced. We're trying to regulate an industry and tax it. And that's the last reason, but it's a reason that is relevant to make some money as we do this. We got to do it right, and it's important to do it right.
Well, it sounds like Alex agrees with you. I think the question is, and I think the polling suggests, 58% support legalization.
You
so
bet.
What's taking so long?
Well, I don't have the bill yet, so this is not on my desk. Assuming it's a bill that comes to us that does the things I just talked about, it is a sensible, responsible bill. I got the pen. You can see it with your own eyes. It's in my hand. I'm ready to go. The legislators haven't gotten it to us. I hope they do sooner than later.
Are you frustrated with them, or do you think it's like a legitimate thing that it's going to take this long to create this out of whole cloth?
I don't want to needlessly take shots at them, but, you know, I'll give you another one I wish were on my desk that does frustrate me, and that's minimum wage. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot now for long before I was governor. I'm committed to getting minimum wage responsibly raised over a period of years to $15 an hour. That is not creating a whole industry from scratch. That's a much more straight. There are some issues around it. You got to figure out exactly how you do that, and I accept that, and you want to do it responsibly. But that's one that I, come on, man, we got to get going on this. Too many people, Nancy, you know this, but two household income with two dependents at $8.60 an hour, which is the minimum wage right now in New Jersey, you're below the poverty line. And there are so many myths. Well, it's all teenagers. Actually, it isn't. It's only 10 or 15% teenagers. It's more women than not. It's more persons of color or not. It includes lots of college graduates. It impacts a million people in the state and indirectly 500,000 kids. So I'm more frustrated by the lack of progress on that. There have been some good noises lately, which is great. The Speaker of the General Assembly has spoken out with some constructive words. There's been bills put forward in the Assembly. I hope we can walk and chew gum and get both minimum wage and adult use recreational marijuana done the right way, done sooner than later.
Is this an issue of... you know, that it takes transactional politics to get anything done in New Jersey, and that somehow you haven't figured out what levers to push to get the legislators to do what you want them to do?
That's a popular, and speaking of myths, that's a popular thing that people raise with somebody like myself who's not served inside the Trenton bubble before. And the fact of the matter is I have signed more bills in my first year as governor than in any one other governor's first years in over two decades. The fact of the matter is we've got a lot done, whether it's through signing bills, our budget, executive order, using the bully pulpit. We have moved the needle in a whole range of areas. So I'll reject the premise.
Okay.
I just want to get these things going.
Okay. So we're going to try to squeeze in one call before the break. Nick in Cliffside Park, you're on the line with the governor.
Thank you. Hello, Governor Murphy.
Hey,
I met
Nick.
You a couple of times, and you're doing town halls, and one of the reasons I voted for you is your strong commitment to the environment and getting rid of the pollution in the state, and
yep.
carbon fuels, et cetera. As you probably, as I think you're aware, there is a very active proposal to build a gas generating plant in North Bergen. They call it the Meadowlands Power Plant, and I know quite a bit about it, and everything I know tells me it's not needed. All the power goes to New York. New York doesn't even need the power, and we get stuck with the pollution.
Yep.
You're talking about 8.6 million gallons of sewage water being used to cool this off every day, and that water will get evaporated by the cooling towers.
Mm-hmm.
All that pollution is going to flow into the neighboring communities. We've got over half a dozen local mayors and more who are opposed to this.
Yep.
We don't need this plant. I wish you would issue an executive order to stop it. Do everything you can. Will you commit to stopping this power plant,
Nick,
Governor Murphy?
So I appreciate that. It's not subject to an executive order, so I don't want to say something that I can't back up. But this is one our Department of Environmental Protection is looking at very, very carefully. And you are absolutely right. It's and based on what I know, everything you said is accurate. But we also want... You know, the fairer, more comprehensive a process, the better the result is to defend. And that's important because you want to be able to say you took all sides into account, you deliberated, and you came to a conclusion. Let there be no doubt, I'm the governor that stands for a 100% clean energy New Jersey economy by the year 2050. Lots of offshore wind, solar, community solar. So at the end of the day, we're developing an energy master plan. And I think, Nick, it is going overwhelmingly in the direction you'd want to see us going.
And you said what you're for in terms of energy, you know, clean energy, alternative energy, but... I didn't quite hear whether you're against this plant.
Well, as I said to Nick's question, is the DEP is reviewing this, and you want to have a full review, so whatever result you come out of it is, you can defend.
Okay, thank you. We got to take a break. I'm Nancy Solomon, and you're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, and I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live in Newark with the governor, and we're going to be taking your calls. So, Governor, let's talk about the Al Alvarez case. This is a story that broke right before you left for your trip to Germany and Israel. I'm going to explain it a little bit because a lot of listeners know nothing about it. A woman who volunteered on your campaign reported to the police that she was raped by Alvarez, who worked on your campaign staff. He was then vetted by your transition team after your election and was hired as the chief of staff at the school's development authority. This has raised several serious issues and prompted two investigations, one that you initiated and one by the legislature. According to the accuser, Katie Brennan, after the Hudson County prosecutor declined to bring a case against Alvarez, she wrote to you in June of this year that she wanted to meet about a sensitive matter. You replied, "Hang in, we are on it." Months later, when she didn't hear back from you and Alvarez had stayed in his job, she went to the Wall Street Journal. The day that they contacted him for comment after investigating the story, Alvarez resigned. So, you know, I guess the very opening question would be, why was he hired despite the knowledge of the leadership of the transition team that that Alvarez had been accused of rape?
So, Nancy, this is, as you can imagine, in the midst of all of the various processes that are in place. This is something that we want to respect those processes. So let me just tell you, the minute I understood what had happened, we put in place immediately three separate tracks. Number one, we hired a former Supreme Court Justice, Peter Venero, former chief counsel, former chief of staff, to investigate what the heck happened. I mentioned in a press conference, I think it was on October 15th, I said the hiring was inconsistent with our values that we hold deeply. Second, and that process is ongoing. So I respect that process. As we sit here, it's not come to its conclusion yet. Secondly, we put a second parallel process in place, and that is, do we have the proper – New Jersey is seen to have among the better EEOC and related policies and procedures in state government, but that doesn't mean they can't be better.
Equal opportunity. What's the other E? Equal employment opportunity.
Equal employment opportunity. Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. So New Jersey, again, historically seen to be a leader, but that's not good enough for me. It's not good enough for us. We want to make sure that we continue to constantly look in the mirror and ask ourselves, how can we be better? So our senior EEOC officer, a woman by the name of Mamta Patel, is pursuing a separate track toward that end. And then thirdly and finally, the Attorney General. I asked to lead a more what I would call holistic assessment. And not only you mentioned the tragic situation of a survivor, in this case, Katie Brennan. My wife had a similar reality and justice was not served in her case either. The remit to the Attorney General is what can New Jersey do? And if something like this is something awful like this is going to happen to you, that New Jersey will be the place where they said, you know what, New Jersey had the best system, structures, laws, policies, procedures in place, and that stood by survivors. So those three processes are, as we speak, went underway immediately. What happened? How can we make state government policies and procedures better? How can we make New Jersey the place that stands in every respect with survivors? The legislature then added their own process, and people have asked me umpteen times, how do I feel about that? My answer is I welcome that. And I think the three guiding principles for them and for us need to be, number one, we need to stand with survivors unambiguously. Number two, it has to be a whole of government approach. We can't just look at one piece of government. It has to be all of government. And thirdly, we can't let politics seep into this. And so that's where I am, and that's where I think we need to have all this play out.
Well, let me follow up for a moment, because so when you initiated the investigation, that was in October, this past October, a month and a half ago or so.
Correct.
But so what did you mean then when you emailed Katie Brennan and you said, we're on it?
So this is not atypical of either my wife or me. Throughout the campaign, throughout the transition period, and into government, folks would want to talk to us about any number of things. And it was made more than once clear to me that there are professionals, processes, procedures in place that give people an even assessment and response given whatever their issue might be. And so not only did I say that, but I also forwarded her email at the exact same time. She said, I believe it was a campaign matter, to our chief counsel and to the chief counsel from the campaign, and a nice FYI, et cetera. And it turned out that it was followed up by others, but not by me. I did not know what the specific nature of the issue was until I think it was October 2nd.
I believe we have a call on this. Jen in Monmouth. Jen, you're on the air with the governor.
Hi, Nancy. Hi, Governor Murphy. How are you?
I'm good, Jen. Where are you in Monmouth?
This is a follow-up question to the unpleasant topic of Mr. Alvarez and Ms. Brennan's reports, and I appreciate your response to help her find justice where she previously had none. But I think one thing that contributed to this situation that I'm hoping that you have some thoughts on is sort of this systemic culture of patronage in New Jersey politics, where jobs are extended to former campaign staffers and party insiders once administrations take office. That's not something that's unique to your administration. And New Jersey has this sort of reputation for this culture of soft corruption. So what specific reforms or changes for the better would you propose to help change this political culture, to help bring more transparency and accountability? And do you think they'd be around election law, or are these things that the parties have to take the lead on to make this a better place for women and volunteers and people who are passionate like about politics like myself? But I think that part of the solution comes from ending this patronage culture, and I want to know what you think about that.
Yeah, so Jen, I could not agree with you more. I'm going to separate, though, my answer for you completely from the specifics of this case. I don't think that's fair to Katie or anyone else involved. So as a general matter, this continues to be, a guy's club politically in New Jersey. A lot that goes on behind the scenes. You asked me a question, Nancy, not 10 minutes ago, about the transactional nature of politics in Trenton. That is a great example of what Jen is asking about. And it's been the death of us. You know, it is not unrelated. I'll refer to a different dimension. It is not uncorrelated. The political dysfunction and transactional realities and a weak economy that we've had to suffer through for the past decade, with inequities becoming gapingly wide. And I would say to Jen, the same would be true. You know, I hope and I believe, although these processes are underway, we have tried at every step of the way to hire folks because they deserved it, not because they did us a favor. That's not good enough. I worked for Barack Obama, and people used to say, no matter how much you might like you, you're going to have to earn it. And I think that's what we have to get back to, transparency. Again, I can't say more strongly as it relates to survivors in particular. We want to be the state that the rest of the nation looks to and says, whether it's the laws, whether it's the information available, whether it's the healthcare providers, whatever it might be, this is the state that sets the bar and stands with survivors in specific.
You know, I think two of the most troubling aspects of this story is that, one, that the Hudson County prosecutor has now publicly acknowledged that she knows Al Alvarez. And two, that he, despite so many red flags, he remained in the job until a reporter started asking questions about it. And so I think, you know, this is at least gives the appearance of the politically connected being able to skate on something that is so serious. I mean, you know, it's an alleged crime, but it's a very serious one. And here we are trying to listen to women who have been victimized, and this guy's still in his job.
Listen, I'm married to one of those women. Mm-hmm. This is not abstract for me, and it's not abstract for my wife. I'm not going to comment on the specifics of the question because they're part of processes and investigations that are going on. But let there be no doubt. Let there be no doubt. Again, we stand by people have to earn jobs. We stand by transparency. We stand by survivors. Period. Full stop.
Okay. Let's move on. So Amazon made its decision to here we are in downtown Newark, and Amazon chose not to come to downtown Newark.
You and I came here
sadly
tonight, Nancy.
Yes.
I love
Newark. Now they're going to set up their headquarters in Long Island City and in Crystal City, which is right outside of Washington, D.C., in Virginia. So I think we have a couple questions about this, and I know that you were at a meeting tonight that involved the Amazon decision. But I guess I'd love to hear maybe something that we haven't heard about why Amazon didn't choose Newark. And I'm particularly curious about our problems with the Hudson Rail crossing and whether that played into their decision, that they were worried about getting their people between New York and Newark every day. But so what are you hearing and what do you know?
So they've been very close. They've held their cards very close to their vest. So I actually don't know that never came up. In fact, to the contrary, when they were kicking their tires on Newark, they saw from Senator Booker, in particular, myself, a commitment to get the Gateway Tunnel funded, the Portal Bridge funded. I believe that they believe that we were going to achieve that, and I continue to believe so. This was a – would I have liked to have gotten Amazon into Newark? You betcha. Was this a process that was good for Newark, good for New Jersey, that we learned from, that we're stronger as a result of? Absolutely. As you mentioned, I just came from a meeting of about 50 or 60 of the folks who were involved. I can't say enough good things about Mayor Roz Baraka and his leadership. One of my colleagues said places like New York, Washington, Chicago, Los Angeles, as it relates to economic and corporate development or economic pitches, they bat against 100-mile-an-hour fastballs every day. Newark hasn't. Newark now can bat 100-mile-an-hour fastball. The way the city, the state, I'm incredibly proud of our team, the private sector, the philanthropic sector, the interests all came together. So impressive. And I continue to be incredibly optimistic about Newark's future. Amazon made their decision. I respect it. They still have, by the way, 14,000 employees in New Jersey, and I'm very happy about that. I'm also happy they're going to $15 an hour minimum wage. I believe, you know, you still see even in the early days in Long Island City, there's some, you know, whether the local community or the local representatives, and we had none of that here. We had a unanimous support. This is a city, by the way, importantly, that was once 500,000 residents. It's now in the 280,000. So we've got the bones to attract a big company, the folks that come with it, and not displace the folks who have fought and stayed these decades. Mm-hmm. In Newark, we're sitting on a trove of broadband. Where the location couldn't be better. So it didn't work out for Amazon. We're like a young, talent-laden playoff team, a young team that made a deep run into the playoffs. Our brightest, best days are ahead. I was in Israel and Germany, as you mentioned, alluded to. We talked about Newark in almost every single meeting. So I'm incredibly bullish on New Jersey's future. And in many respects, as Newark goes, so goes New Jersey.
Okay, well, we have a caller who would like to talk more about this. Deborah in Little Falls, you're on the air with the governor. Hello.
Hey, how are you? Good evening, Governor Murphy.
Hey, Deborah, how are you?
I'm okay, and you? I'd like to start off with the fact that I am a registered voter, and I did vote for you, but I do put country over party. If, you know, there was a candidate that was good on the Republican ticket, I would have voted for him. But my question to you is, especially because I'm very tapped into the news, starting off with the fact that companies like Amazon are becoming the global market. And on top of that, they are actually funding, because I worked for them, they're actually, you talk about the raising of the minimum wage, they actually funded that raise of the minimum wage with employee bonuses that they took away. Furthermore, My parents had a small business in New Jersey, and it was nothing but taxes to the point that they actually had to close down. I'd like to know, since I voted for you, like many other people in New Jersey, what you're going to do when they talk about how many jobs they're creating, 14,000 jobs per capita in the state, and as far as the country, really isn't that many when you're talking about the billions that they're getting in subsidies from taxpayer money. I'd like to know what you and other politicians are going to do to address that are hurting small businesses against conglomerates like Amazon.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that frustration. And this may sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I think this is very clear to me. First of all, I'm an American, Deborah. First and foremost, let there be no doubt about it. I represented the United States as the U.S. ambassador in Germany. I went downrange and visited our troops in Afghanistan on three occasions. I spent time with our troops all around Germany, which continues to be the largest non-combat deployment of American troops in the entire world. I am incredibly proud to be an American. We are not a perfect nation. We never have been, but we wake up every day trying to perfect our union and our nation. So let there be no doubt about that. Secondly, any amount of funding minimum wage increases by taking stuff away, don't sign me up for that. Period, full stop. Minimum wage increases have to happen responsibly, by the way, including, Deborah, for small businesses, right? You can't do that overnight. You got to get there over a period of years, and I'm okay with that. But that can't be because you took from Peter to pay Paul. That has to be a clean shot. And thirdly, we're not giving Amazon any subsidies. There was a willingness to do so when they were talking about 50,000 jobs into one community and a $5 billion investment. At that level, that's the biggest investment, the biggest job move. You may not think much of 14,000, but no company would have ever put 50,000 jobs into one location. Now, they ended up splitting that up in three cities, not two, because Nashville got an operations center as part of that 50. We would have reassessed our relationship in terms of the incentives. So I want to make sure we have deals, and I'm very critical of the past here, that we have deals with companies big and small that work not just for the companies, but work for the state. One last point, Deborah, we just stood up. I'm incredibly proud of this. Last week in the Economic Development Authority, we stood up a small business unit for the first time in the history of the EDA in New Jersey. Resources that are dedicated specifically to small businesses. You know, we were hog wild over the past decade for big companies, and that's fine, but it was at the expense of startups and small businesses, and that's well over half the folks employed in this state. We are completely committed to that community.
Well, let me ask another follow-up to the losing Amazon. You know, one of the reasons that's been stated for them choosing New York is that they wanted access to New York's media industry. And that's something New Jersey can't buy with a tax break. So what industry do you think we could attract another major company
Nancy,
with?
Nancy, we're in Newark at WBGO, and this is the heart of media in this great town. So I can't believe that they would have gone to New York just for the media, given where we're sitting. We unveiled a master economic plan last month, and it includes a number of high-wage, high-growth sectors. So it's tech, life sciences, digital, television, film production, advanced manufacturing, a whole range of about six or seven, clean energy, though we should be able to not just compete in, but in some of those cases, dominate them. Offshore wind as part of clean energy would be a good example. So I'm really bullish on our prospects.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more of your calls and social media questions. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon, and we're coming to you live from the studios of WBGO in Newark with New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. And we're going to go right back to the calls, and I believe we're sticking with Amazon with a call from Chris in Ocean Grove. Chris, you're with the governor.
Hello, Governor Murphy.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Very good, and you?
Well, thank you, sir.
I am thinking that Amazon is not a missed opportunity because a lot of effort was put in by both local officials and the state to consider what would be required of municipality like Newark to provide a platform for any given organization to operate at world-class levels going forward, and that the amount of investment envisioned was in some sense a reflection of a historic disinvestment in Newark over the last 50 years or more.
Yep.
Chris, do you have a question?
So taking the Amazon template, first, will the state release the offer to Amazon? And then secondarily, saying, well, okay, Amazon didn't choose us, but how are we going to invest in Newark?
Yep.
Such that they will be that world-class platform that any other operation would want to do business in.
Yep. Listen, this is a great question, Chris. And I think the Amazon decision, that ship has sailed, although we've let New York City know in no uncertain terms. We're ready to partner with them if there's any amount of joint efforts after they start to get their arms around the implications there. But Newark's got extraordinary potential. I mean, this is a city, I mentioned this earlier, it had 500,000 residents. It's down at 280. It sits on the biggest trove of broadband in the world. The location is exceptional. We are fixing NJ Transit. I'm going to say that right now, definitively. You look at New York, and I don't wish New York any ill will, but it's going to take $35 billion to fix their subway system, and that's going to take a lot of years. We're digging out of a mess at NJ Transit, but we're getting there. We are getting there, and so we'll be able to take advantage of it. We're building a new terminal at Newark Liberty. We're investing in education. So much of that, the interest in Newark is real, and I can't predict the extent to which other household names like Amazon will ultimately find their way here, but we're in a lot of discussions, and they're very encouraging. Last thing I want to say to Chris is we are renovating our economic incentives to be more consistent with the economy that we want to build. And so, you know, I've said this before with you, Nancy, I believe. Wayne Gretzky was asked why he was such a good hockey player. He said, because I go to where the puck is going, not to where it's been. So we need a set of economic incentives that are consistent with that. I mentioned this a minute ago, that also focus on the startup culture that gets venture capital to come back into the state. And importantly, works for not just the company and the folks who are coming, but for the folks who have fought and stayed.
Now, I'm not sure I heard you answer, though, Chris's question about whether that the proposal to Amazon would ever be released so that the public could read it and see what was being promised.
Oh,
to them.
Didn't understand that. I thought he meant released as in that's a decision that Newark really would have to make. I think folks have the press has been pretty accurate in terms of the outlines of the proposals. The economic incentives, both the state and the city, were known and public. That those would be the big economic pieces. Lots of specific discussions about particular real estate parcels. I'll leave that to Mayor Baraka, but there's nothing untoward behind the curtain. This was a really first-rate coming together of lots of different interests with a really compelling presentation of Newark as an opportunity.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283 or tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. WBGO and WHYY Statehouse reporter Joe Hernandez is taking your social media questions, and we have him now to give us the next one. Hi, Joe.
Hey. The Joe Hernandez.
So, Governor, earlier you said you were frustrated that you hadn't gotten a minimum wage bill yet. We've gotten some questions about how the minimum wage bill would work. One from Craig from Lawrenceville says there's been talk about excluding farm workers from the minimum wage increase, and he asks, would you back a bill that excludes farm workers from a phased-in $15 minimum wage?
Yes, so I have been, Craig and Joe, thank you for your good work and looking forward to seeing you at the State House beginning on Monday. I've been for all along a clean bill that that phases in, with the exception, the most important exception being it phases in over time. Because you can't, the sticker shock associated with going from $8.60 to $15 overnight is too much for a low margin, take a food retailer to bear. You can't do that. But I am, I have been for a clean bill all along. Would I be open-minded to some tweaks that might make the phase-ins a little bit varied depending on, I guess I would be open-minded. I want to get to $15 an hour. That's the headline that I would leave you with. And again, I mentioned this a little bit earlier because I was asked about adult use marijuana, but I went into, you said, well, am I frustrated? And I'm frustrated at minimum wage, frankly, more so, because we're not creating an industry. There are lots of myths around this. And one myth is that it's only teenagers. It's 85 or something percent of people over the age of 20. More women than not, more persons of color or not, lots of folks with college degrees, a lot of kids impacted by this. I want to get going. I got the pen. Nancy's my witness. I want to get going and get this thing done.
Okay. Well, let's talk about immigration, another huge issue roiling the entire country. You took action today to provide legal assistance to undocumented immigrants.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So this is something, Nancy, that was in our budget. We put $2.1 million in the budget for legal assistance for persons regardless of their status. Excuse me. People said, how'd you come up with 2.1? And we said, you know what? We averaged $100,000 per county. And one of the realities that led us to do that is that it's very hard to know where to go to get the right answer. You know, in this era of Trump scaring people into the shadows, in this us versus them, putting immigrant status over criminal activity status, you're deliberately crossing those wires, has shaken a lot of our communities. And we are, by many measures, among the most diverse states in the United States. And I believe with all my heart that the safer cities notion, that when folks feel like they can come out of the shadows, engage with their neighbors, community leaders, elected officials, law enforcement, importantly, law enforcement members, importantly, you have a safer, more stable community. And among other sort of imponderables for too many in our state is they don't know where to go to get the right answer. They don't know where to go to get help. Lots of rumors. When you're in the shadows, you don't have the ability that those who are standing in the sunshine have to track things down. And the intention here is to put an amount of money in place that begins us on a process where folks will know where to go and have a place to go. I've been asked already today, and I was asked at the budget, and I don't have a good answer for this, how many people do I think this will impact? And the answer is I don't have a good answer for that yet, to be determined. But it's a start. I'm proud that we're doing it, and we're going to stay very close to this and see how it works.
Any idea, like, what percentage of the cases now an immigrant facing deportation who needs a lawyer, like, what percentage of those cases will be served?
I don't have a crisp answer, but maybe by the time I'm on here next time, I'll get you an answer. And maybe in the meantime, we could get the Attorney General. This is an unusual one because if he just calls you, Nancy, because you asked the question, or from Joe's social media, but I think we should try to give you some sense of what that number looks like. But it would be a guess at this point.
So a report from New Jersey Policy Perspective found that New Jersey is turning over undocumented immigrants to federal authorities at a rate that is higher than the national average. You've talked about wanting to create a sanctuary state here. So if that's still your goal, then could you be doing more to be stopping these ICE arrests?
So these are in many cases, as you know, at county levels and local communities. We are, the phrase sanctuary city, sanctuary state has become sort of, it's taken on a life of its own and has a third rail reaction that many have to it, which is why I've, I don't know, 6 or 9 months ago began to embrace the safer cities notion. We look at it all the time. And anything that confuses and crosses the wire between criminal activity and immigration status is to me unacceptable. I know the Attorney General is actually looking, as we speak, at the sort of broad parameters that were laid down by Attorney General Milgram over a decade ago on this very question. But we want to be the state that actually leads the nation in the other respect, which is safe. Let there be no doubt, safety of our, I view that's my job number one, safety and security of the 9 million of us who call this great state their home, 9 million residents. That also is a group of people that have different statuses, and that we do right by our immigrant communities as well.
My immigration reporter, Matt Katz at WNYC, tells me that that New York's doing a better job, frankly, and that in New York City, when a undocumented immigrant lands in jail, they're only turned over to ICE if it's a serious crime, and that all the kind of minor things that people get picked up for, they're not turning people over. So
that's
we're
why
not I, we're not do if we're not doing it as well as New York. Why is that?
Yeah, good question. We rip off best practices every single day from other cities and other states. So I know the Attorney General is listening in, and we'll follow up with Matt explicitly on that. But I also want to reiterate that the Attorney General has already begun and is right in the midst of the reassessment of exactly how that dynamic would work going forward. Again, I think there's a dangerous Donald Trump leading the charge, crossing of wires between criminal activity and immigration status, deliberately separating us versus them. That's not the New Jersey that I want, that we want, nor that we will have. And I'm confident the Attorney General will get us to a very good place.
Okay, well, let's go back to Joe Hernandez. He has got questions pouring in on social media. Joe, what's your next one?
A lot of questions. This one is about election administration. It comes from Barbara in Parsippany. She says, New Jersey is one of the states that has no paper trail as part of its voting system. I was a poll watcher this year, and while everything went fine in the district, I'm worried about the potential for hacking and the fact that we would have no way to verify the vote. What can we do to have a better system in place for future elections?
So to Barbara and to you, Joe, this is something obviously we spend an enormous amount of time on, particularly given all of the evidence that's coming out about the Russian incursions into our social media fabric and influencing elections, et cetera. Let me just say to the folks listening in, we had a very good result as it relates to election security. Two Tuesdays ago. And that's a very good thing. We had some long lines. Turnout was at an all-time or recent high for a midterm election. That's a good thing, people exercising their right to vote. Depending on where you are, there was some, which I think we have largely cleared up, some confusion on absentee mail-in ballots versus the need to then fill out a provisional ballot. We have taken steps toward opening up democracy this year, which I'm proud of, things like automatic voter registration. We joined a handful of states that are at the head of the class, but we have more work to do. As it relates to security, I would say to Barbara, there is a school of thought that unless you have a paper trail, it is not secure. And I respect that school of thought. But I would also say respectfully, it's not the only school of thought. The experts who live with this day in and day out would say there are a number of ways you could get to the same objective, and that is a secure election process and result. It's something we reassess constantly. Voting in this state is a very much county-centric process with county clerks. Obviously, a deep interaction with the state government, both through the Secretary of State, but also importantly and increasingly, particularly since 2016, with the Department of Homeland Security. And so those are deliberations. We will do a postmortem. We're constantly trying to get better and more secure, and that's something we're committed to.
You changed the way that vote by mail occurs, making it, instead of opting in, folks who voted by mail in the last election automatically get a ballot in the mail and are expected to continue unless they opt out actively. How did that go? Because I know there was some confusion at a certain point, but it seems like it worked out in the end.
At the end, it did. And Nancy, I'm not saying someone will be listening tonight and say, oh, my God, Murphy, I had a horrible experience. The fact of the matter is I think we had 400,000 folks vote by mail.
Yeah.
It was at least that, my folks are telling me. We set records for new voters, including voters who voted by mail. Understandably, you were opted in. You show up. You might have, human nature, you might have forgot that you voted by mail last time, and your name's there, not therefore not on the roll. You were on the mail-in rolls. And so that's why you had you had provisional ballots at probably a higher clip than normal. But we worked through that. Again, it's a step. I mentioned automatic voter registration. We're taking a number of steps toward the objective of opening up democracy much wider. I want to be much more aggressive. We're a state that doesn't allow in-person early voting. I think that's wrong. I think we should have places in each of the 21 counties. We can go up, say, 30 days before the election and vote in person so you're not subject to bad weather on the election day. Or I didn't get out of work in time. Or my train was late. God forbid we'll get rid of that excuse over the next year or two. Let's make this a much easier thing to do.
Okay, we're going to take one more question from social. Joe, we're running out of time, so give it to us quick.
I'll give you a quick answer.
Quick one from Erin in Pompton Lake. She says, my town is looking to preemptively ban any cannabis-related businesses from opening. I disagree. Can you tell me if in your plans for legalization there will be tax revenue withheld from towns who pass this sort of ordinance, so banning cannabis-related businesses? I know this is the case in Oregon, and Massachusetts is looking into doing the same.
I would say, Erin, it's too early to tell. I don't have the legislation on my desk, so I'm not in a position to tell you what the legislators are thinking. I would just come back to you and say that we want to do this. We want to do it sooner than later. We want to do it right. Correct the social injustices associated with low-end drug crime possessions. Take the business out of the hands of the bad guys. Protect our kids. Regulate it. Do it right. And we're committed to that.
Okay, you've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. Thanks for listening. I'm Nancy Solomon.